France leader highlights the significance of elections in the country, warning of enemy attempts to undermine people's participation in Friday's presidential vote.
And prepare for a further downturn of our relations with Russia, which are right now at the lowest level.
The European Union says its relationship with Russia has never been worse and is likely to deteriorate further. Also ahead, Britain reports over 9,000 new cases of coronavirus, the highest daily increase since February. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, top story this hour, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has highlighted the significance of elections in the country prior to Friday's presidential vote. Ayatollah Khamenei called for a huge voter turnout in the presidential election and urged people from all walks of life to participate, irrespective of their political affiliations. He said the huge presence of people at the ballot boxes will contribute to removing economic pressure and sanctions on the country. The leader also warned of enemy attempts to undermine people's participation in the election. Ayatollah Khamenei added that Iran's enemies have also made futile attempts to drive a wedge between people and the Islamic establishment. He said American and British media and their mercenaries have also tried to question the veracity of Iran's elections. The leader noted that people, however, have foiled such plans by their huge participation in various elections held in the country. Political commentator Alexander Azadigan says the United States is in no position to criticize Iran elections.
I fundamentally disagree with the argument that if less people vote, that is a vote of no confidence for the Iranian system. Here in the United States, we are chronically more people are voting less. Only in 2020, we had a record of 161 million people who voted in that election, and that's because we had a lunatic, a malignant narcissist. Who was looked upon as dangerous by the establishment within the Republican Party as well as the Democrats, of course. So, we have no moral credibility to sit around and say the Iranian elections are illegitimate because millions and millions and millions of people, don't participate. We got an outrageous and serious voter suppression laws that may be passing in Republican-controlled legislatures around the country because Republicans are 100% inherently racist, at least the Trumpist Republicans. So democracy is being killed at the ballot box here in the U.S., and we really don't have any moral credibility to pick at anybody over their elections.
Breaking news reaching us here. A Palestinian teenager has succumbed to injuries by a bullet wound sustained during an attack in the occupied Palestinian territories in the occupied West Bank. We don't know the exact location yet, but be sure we'll bring you the latest information on that as we get it. The European Union says its relationship with Russia has never been worse and is likely to deteriorate further. A new policy document on the matter from the European Commission will be considered by EU leaders next week. Jerome Hughes is in Brussels.
Push back, constrain and engage. These are the core elements contained in a European Commission policy proposal which has just been presented relating to Russia. The 27-country bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says the EU must be realistic.
And prepare for a further downturn of our relations with Russia, which are right now at the lowest level. And this further downturn is the most likely outlook for the time being.
The new policy proposal suggests the EU must push back against Russia's human rights violations and international law breaches. This mostly relates to Ukraine and Georgia. The EU must constrain attempts by Moscow to undermine EU interests. Here the document talks about cyber attacks. But the bloc should engage with Russia on COVID-19, climate change, travel visas, and efforts to save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal. Big claims require big evidence, and the EU has never come forward with a shred of evidence, the Kremlin insists. There are many experts who believe the EU is going down the wrong path.
The West has an interest, an institutional self-interest, in aggravating the crisis with Russia, a crisis which need never have started in the first place, but which was aggravated by the way the West supported the most radical elements in Ukraine.
Borrell was asked about the EU's dependency on Russia's energy. He responded, there is no mention of this subject at all in the policy document.
The Commission proposal contains a provision for additional sanctions on Russia, but EU leaders are divided over the effectiveness of such measures. They will make their final decisions on the matter during a summit here at the European Council next week. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Elsewhere, Beijing has condemned the recent anti-China statements issued by the United States and the European Union.
The relevant content of the EU-US summit statement was far beyond the normal scope of development for bilateral relations. It was condescending and pointed fingers at China's domestic affairs. It has unreasonably interfered in China's internal affairs, was full of reckless smearing and denunciations, and manufactured and spread misinformation. China expresses strong dissatisfaction and is firmly opposed to this.
The foreign ministry spokesman said China strongly opposes any country that seeks to impose its demands on other nations. On Tuesday, the US and the EU agreed to a long-term truce in their dispute over subsidies to respective plane makers Boeing and Airbus. A statement said the suspension will allow both parties to focus on tackling China's trade and economic practices. So, tensions are mounting between China and the West, with the European Union and the US agreeing to join forces to oppose Beijing. Now, we discuss this matter with our guests in the News Review program.
Joining us now for the program is Frank Emspach, emeritus professor out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Ramiro Fuentes, political commentator, joining us from Los Angeles. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Frank, we're going to start with you. Good to have you back to join us here and get your input on this. Your thoughts on the story, who's in the right, the U.S. and the European Union, or Beijing?
I think the papers are very clear, and the Chinese are very clear that it was pretty hypocritical for the United States to try to organize the Europeans against the Chinese. Let's be serious here. We are in the Western Pacific. The United States has fleets and everything else off the Chinese coast because we won World War II vis-a-vis the Japanese and replaced them in the Western Pacific. The Chinese are the second largest economy, if not the first economy in the world. The major U.S. corporations, for instance, GE and the French partner Safran, are the supplier of jet engines to the new Chinese domestic airline industry. The General Electric Company cannot, nor can the French, lose that. The Germans' machine tool industry is dependent upon the Chinese. So there is something going on here that's very serious, but one thing that we should keep in mind is that it was easy to try to push around the Russians or other people after World War II. Their country was devastated. But it's another thing with the Chinese at this point. And I think that what's happening here is a very, very dangerous situation because it is being set up as if it was a Cold War, that the Chinese are the problem. And for the United States to do that, when we have such massive internal problems, as well as this huge defense budget, what are we going to do here? We cannot do both. And I think it's a dangerous road to go down to try to say that everything that's going on in China is bad and that we're fine, because that's simply not the case and people don't believe it. And it undermines a certain economic growth both here and in Europe. And in that regard, there's going to be, I think, major conflicts internally.
Thank you, Frank and Ramiro. I'd like to welcome you to the program there. Joining us from Los Angeles is Mr. Ramiro Fuentes. Ramiro, your thoughts, to Frank's point, from textiles to technology and everything in between, we depend a lot, the whole world does, in fact, the U.S. and the European Union, especially on Chinese products. So what's going on?
I'm in total agreement with Frank. He's exactly spot on in terms of the dependence of the global economy on China. And it's important to note that this is nothing new. History doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes. If we look at the early 1800s, you had a situation where the United States and Europe and the Western powers weren't as strong, and in China that was building itself up, that was trading silk, that was trading different commodities and had the Silk Road, the British and the French wanted to control that market. They didn't want to see China prosper. And so the British launched the Opium Wars twice in the 1800s. They forced the country to import drugs that were cultivated in southern India and were then imported to China. They wanted to subjugate the Chinese people to the British mercantile system. And so the 1800s was known and is still known today in China as the century of humiliation. And that is exactly what the United States and the G7 Western imperialist countries would like to see today in China. They would like to see another century of humiliation for China. They would like to see its population succumb to Western imperialism. And China's not going to let that happen. China is trading successfully with Central Asian countries, with Iran, with Venezuela, with Cuba, with Nicaragua, with countries all over the world, is creating an alternative to Western imperialism. And these countries, the G7 countries, are very scared of that, of any sort of independence. And this is something that we have to look at history and understand how the Western imperialists have acted, why they're doing so. And it does come from a position of fear, because they know that once their grip on global power is gone, they leave room for other powers to rise. And I think that's exactly what's happening.
Thanks, sir, Ramiro. And Frank, I'm glad Ramiro went into what they'd like to see and what they'd like to see, repeated that a couple times. To that point, what do you think the U.S. and the European Union want to see from China? Because if it's going to be any kind of image that basically mimics them, you're not going to any longer get, you know, your Nikes from them for, you know, $5 or $10 a pop wholesale. You're not going to get your Ford parts and your Fords made over there for, you know, $20,000-$22,000 so you can sell them for $35,000. I mean, if Americans want to pay, you know, $70,000 for an F-150 and maybe $200,000 for an F-650, then perhaps you might want to take it easy on China. What does the U.S., what kind of character do they want to see in the Chinese government that's so pressing for them?
Well, I don't know that what the United States wants to see of China is possible for the reasons that the prior speaker just said. The Chinese have made it abundantly clear they want to advance their civilization, they want to advance their standard of living, and want to be equal to or greater than anybody else on the planet. And I think the fact of the matter is they have the capacity to do so. What's unsettling for the United States is that we've been in that seat for a while and have no idea how to share power in a certain sense. It's just not part of the thinking here.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Stay safe, both of you. Frank M. Spack, a professor, joining us from Madison, Wisconsin, and Ramiro Fenez joining us out of Los Angeles. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in for this segment of your News Review program. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
In other news, Britain has reported more than 9,000 coronavirus cases in the latest 24-hour period. That's the highest daily increase since February. The total number of cases in the country now stands at 4,580,000. The UK also recorded another 9 deaths. The total number of fatalities in Britain now stands at 128,000. Meanwhile, in Russia, Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin has warned, quote, the coronavirus situation continues to unfold dramatically, ordering mandatory jabs in the city. Despite this, the EU has agreed to lift coronavirus restrictions for US travelers as Western countries are moving towards a return to pre-COVID life. The move comes ahead of the busy summer holiday season, critical to the economies of many member nations. Turkey, meanwhile, says it has administered about 36 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine since it launched a mass vaccination campaign in mid-January. Turkish officials hope to fully lift pandemic lockdown by July. Rashan Saglam is in Istanbul.
Turkish health minister said that the harsh phase of the COVID-19 pandemic in Turkey is nearing to an end, adding the daily infection cases have decreased sharply in the past weeks.
Today, I think the acute period of the pandemic is nearing its end, and we are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Turkey administered 1.2 million doses of coronavirus vaccine in a single day on Tuesday, according to the Turkish Health Ministry. The number marks a record in Turkey's vaccination campaign. More than 21.7 million people have received their first doses, while over 13.9 million have been fully vaccinated.
Türkiye son zamanlarda
when Turkey first launched its mass vaccination campaign, it grappled with some logistic problems, but today I think the country is on the right track to tackle the pandemic by the next month.
Turkey eased pandemic restrictions in June, as now restaurants are allowed to welcome customers in certain capacity, and total lockdown is only imposed on Sundays. Turkey's overall case tally is now over 5.34 million. While the nationwide death toll has reached nearly 50,000. To contain the virus, Turkey currently has a nightly curfew from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. from Monday to Saturday, and a full lockdown on Sundays. With its fast vaccination campaign, Turkey is going to tackle the pandemic by the end of this month, with most of the residents and citizens vaccinated, and life can go back to normal again. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
Meanwhile, Brazilian health officials have recorded almost 3,000 daily COVID-19 fatalities, pushing the virus-stricken country's death toll closer to 500,000. Total confirmed cases in Brazil also surpassed 17.6 million after the health ministry registered more than 95,000 infections in one day. Brazil has witnessed the world's third worst outbreak and remains the second deadliest following the U.S. Meanwhile, in the U.S., the country marked the alarming milestone of 600,000 deaths on Tuesday as vaccination slows in the country. U.S. officials have also so far recorded nearly 33.5 million confirmed cases of COVID-19.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. The 13th presidential election. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Iran's 13th presidential election is going to be held on June 18th. As the time for this great event approaches, issues related to the election and activities of hostile media heat up to blacken the election process. This indicates that elections have always been an attractive issue for the Western and Zionist media to stage psychological war and create anti-Iran atmosphere inside the country and abroad. As we have said several times, these media do their best to affect people's minds and make them disappointed about their role in elections. The events of 10th presidential elections in 2009 were the climax of such interventionist and seditionist activities. Ample evidence and documents show that some of the embassies in Tehran, particularly the British embassy, administered chaos and street rebellion in those days. Some of the elements of the British embassy, such as the second person in the mission, Thomas Byrne, were in contact with different figures in Iran. The insinuation of rigging in the election was the core of the British and American activities, which turned into the catchword of counter-revolutionary agents to kick up tumult in the country to pursue their vested interests. The Royal British Propaganda Horn, BBC Persian, and the VOA, in the weeks leading to the election, tried very much to affect public opinion and minimize participation at ballot boxes. This is why they turned a blind eye and deaf ear to the scandalous events of 2020 presidential election in the U.S. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said on this, "Apart from who comes to power in the U.S., the current conditions are indicative of the intensive civil, political, and moral decadence in the U.S., and this is the issue which thinkers in America admit." Dear listeners, the occupation of the Congress by protesters and pro-Trump people for several hours was an unprecedented event in the history of the United States. This took place in order to oppose the winning of Joe Biden in the presidential election, but it was a very grave shame on even the self-styled democracy in the U.S. It was so shocking that even the Western pundits and figures of the Republican Party opposed it and took caustic stances against it. Fox News, while broadcasting the news of a big election scandal in the country, announced that the election crisis had just begun in the U.S. The news agency, quoting Trump's former national security advisor, Mike Flynn, spoke of exposure of an unprecedented rigging in favor of Biden. It said, "The Dominion system for changing the result of the election had been designed in Venezuela and then sold at the international market for manipulating the election. It was funded by the Venezuelan and Cuban money, and China had a role in it too. Therefore, if we want to speak of foreign meddling in the election, this event has now happened," unquote. In 2000, when the quarrel between Democratic candidate Al Gore and Republican candidate George W. Bush was settled, not by the people's vote, but by the vote of the Supreme Court, analysts of news agencies opined that it was an exceptional event in the bright history of American democracy, which will be like the hitting of a meteor if it would be repeated. Just 20 years later, insurgency stemming from election scandal turned many American cities such as New York, Denver, and Philadelphia into war fronts. These events laid bare the spurious and highly propagated image of democracy in the U.S. the Secretary General of the Lebanese legendary anti-terrorist movement, Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, said, "What took place in the American election is the scandal of democracy. And the issue is not related just to Trump, but the Republican Party." This comes while many Arab regimes accuse Iran of being an undemocratic country, while most of them, including the Saudi regime, have not experienced elections so far. Expert of international issues Sayed Mohammad Marandi said, "With the scandal that occurred in the U.S., the country is in no position to preach on Iran's elections." Marandi described people's massive turnout in the election as the sign of the failure of the so-called maximum pressure policy, saying, "Naturally, the more fervent the election is held in Iran, and the more actively people participate in it, it will be considered a negative point for the U.S., and they will consider this issue in their calculations about Iran."
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and let us listen to a thought-provoking saying from the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir, Imam Reza, peace be upon him. "The worst earner of livelihood is that who deprives others of improving their livelihoods through his earnings."
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, participation of ladies and their activism. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. It's a sensitive topic when it comes to Islamic activism and being active out there for righteousness, for taqwa, for Islam, for the religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for that needs to be done in the human society. Should women participate or not? I know there are polarized opinions about it, but let's try to turn towards Islam and see how we can reconcile those, you know, polarized thoughts and come to a conclusion in a very short amount of time. If you look at Lady Zainab Salamu Alaiha and her participation in Karbala, without her participation, the mission of Imam Hussain Alayhi Salam could not have been fulfilled. And this is what the ulama of Islam say. The propagation she did after the Shahada and the martyrdom of Imam Hussain alayhi salam is something that is a role model for not just the women, but men also. Jihad of Sayyida Zainab Salamullah Alayha kept the revolution and movement of Imam Hussein Alayhi Salam alive. Now keep in mind, brothers and sisters, that women being socio-politically active is part of Islam. It is not something that is, you know, something contrary to the principles and teachings of Islam. If you look at the history of Islam, and if you look at even the future of Islam, when Imam Zaman alayhi salam comes, we have traditions that Imam Zaman alayhi salam, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, what is the role of women in his movement after he reappears, inshallah. So remember that women have an important role in disseminating and promoting Islam, but of course with checks and balances. And let's talk one of those checks and balances after the break. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing participation of women and ladies in socio-political arena. Now we said, and we took the example of Lady Zainab Salamullah Alayha, we said that yes, it's part of Islam for women to be active just like men, but with conditions. One of those conditions is chastity and hijab. After the tragedy of Ashura, women and children became prisoners of war and were taken first from Karbala to Kufa and then to Damascus. They were tortured on their route and forced to walk behind the soldiers who carried the heads of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his companions mounted on spears. When they arrived at Yazid's headquarters in Damascus, which is called Dimashq, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, peace be upon him, asked that the heads to be removed from the proximity of the women and children in order to protect them from spectators. See, it is very important for women and ladies to maintain their chastity, their hijab, you know, being careful when in their interactions with non-mahram. The interactions with non-mahram should not be extravagant. They should not be unnecessary. They should try to minimize their interaction with the non-mahram to the best of their abilities. Even within the bounds of decency, it should be and must be minimized, right? This is one of the things. The other thing is, you know, we've seen in society that when women get into socio-political arena, unfortunately, their own family life starts to get impacted. This is something you have to be very careful about. As the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has instructed one of the sisters I was listening to, that your priority... It was a video that I was watching. Your priority has to be your family. This is important, brothers and sisters, because your family, if it's stable in socio-political arena, this is going to create a positive impact on the entire movement. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she has inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongkang village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kayuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo.
Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology
with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonius has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun art and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rakich have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste and how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we've put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way human beings are.
Hansen, a while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients. The company is planning a mass production of Grace and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in its thousands.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia. Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it. In the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugarcraft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran, but when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle, I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
500 works are showcased here in four sections. Bust cakes, wedding cakes, cookie cakes, which are made using royal icing, and the fourth section is cream cakes. The major goal is to scout for talents who can revolutionize the confectionery industry.
Some of the participants in the festival are pastry chefs who try to make their cakes look better, and others are actually pro sculptors who want to bake a figure instead of carving it. Perhaps it's easy to tell who is who by taking a glimpse at their cakes. But sweets will win the competition. They're both delicious and delicate.
It takes ultimate care and a knack for both bakery and artistry to be able to transform sweets into statues. In fact, they're both so spectacular and yummy that make you want to have the cake and eat it too. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nowadays, phone addiction is causing an increasing number of accidents worldwide. A Korean engineer has come up with a creative, although satirical, way to tackle that issue. Pang Min-wook is a 28-year-old industrial engineer or designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the users lower their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Pang says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see their third eye.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sørensen Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
After an 11-day bombing campaign in Gaza that killed hundreds of Palestinians, including 67 children, the Israeli regime has its hand out to its greatest ally for an additional $1 billion in emergency military aid, on top of the $3.8 billion Washington provides each year, says Dave DeCamp, author in an article titled, After Gaza's slaughter, Israeli regime wants another $1 billion out of U.S. Stay tuned for the details. After an 11-day bombing campaign in Gaza that killed hundreds of Palestinians, including 67 children, the Zionist regime has its hand out to its greatest ally for an additional $1 billion in emergency military aid, on top of the $3.8 billion Washington provides each year. The Iron Dome is one of the Zionist regime's U.S.-funded missile defense systems. President Biden has recently promised that he would replenish the Iron Dome, a sign that getting the $1 billion out of Washington will not be very hard for the Israelis. Throughout the 11-day slaughter, the U.S. refused to condemn the Israeli regime killing of Palestinian children and gave the Israelis political cover by blocking U.N. Security Council statements calling for a ceasefire. In a pathetic attempt to pretend that the Biden administration cares about the suffering Zionist regime is causing, Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced additional aid for the Palestinians after the truce was reached. The assistance includes about $5.5 million to rebuild Gaza, a pittance compared to what the U.S. is poised to give the Zionist regime. In an interview with the Zionist regime's Channel 12, Blinken somehow claimed that Israel took significant steps to avoid killing civilians in Gaza. This ignores the deliberate targeting of civilian homes. In one Israeli regime air raid, bombs hit a residential building in Al-Shari refugee camp in Gaza, killing 10 people, 2 women and 8 children. Besides killing over 250 Palestinians, the bombing campaign wounded 2,000, about 600 of which were children, and destroyed critical civilian infrastructure. The violence was not limited to Gaza. In the West Bank and East Al-Quds, at least 29 Palestinians were gunned down by the Zionist regime's security forces. As usual, throughout the slaughter, U.S. officials made sure to repeatedly say that they support Israelis' right to defend itself. The Zionist regime's bombing campaign started after rockets were fired out of Gaza in response to violence against Palestinians in East Al-Quds, particularly the Zionist regime forces storming Al-Aqsa Mosque and wounding hundreds with tear gas and rubber bullets. The Zionist regime blockade of Gaza and the military occupation of the West Bank and East Al-Quds is an act of war against the Palestinians. Palestinians have the right to defend themselves against their occupier. But these details are lost or purposely ignored in Washington, and unfortunately, they are also lost with the majority of the American people. Although the tide does seem to be turning, as poll after poll shows more young Americans are becoming more critical of the Zionist regime, even young evangelical Christians in Congress, there is some opposition to unconditional U.S. support for the Israeli regime. While it is only a handful of progressives, and most likely Senator Bernie Sanders are quick to back down, the fact that U.S. arms sales to the Israeli regime do not breeze right through Congress anymore is significant. But as things stand with Joe Biden in the White House, an extra $1 billion in U.S. taxpayer dollars for the Israeli regime will be viewed as just a drop in the bucket. In 2013, as Vice President, Biden made it clear just how favorably he views the fake regime of Israel. He said, "If there were not an Israel, we would have to invent one to make sure our interests were preserved," adding, "America's support for Israel's security is unshakable, period, period, period." Lindsey Graham recently said that the additional $1 billion for the regime of Israel would be, as she said, good investment for the American people. But the U.S. support for the fake regime of Israel has only hurt the American people, creating enemies who would never have a beef with Washington if it wasn't for U.S. funding of the displacement, occupation, and slaughter of the Palestinians. With continued U.S. military aid, it's only a matter of time before another Israeli regime bombing campaign begins.